to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the locking of domain name subject to UDRP proceedings drafting team on the 21st of February. And on the line, we have Konstantinos Komatis, Wilson Abigaba, Matt Schneller, Michele Nilon, Randy Ferguson, Joy Lidicote, Laurie Anderson, and for staff, we have Marika Koenigs and myself, Glenda Sangeri. And on the Adobe Connect, I don't think we have got anybody who is not on the call. Thank you very much. Over to you, Konstantinos.
Thank you very much, Glenn. I'm not sure where I'm the vice chair, and the chair is here.
The vice chair, Michele, over
to
you.
We're co-chairs.
Oh, well,
all right, then. I can start. I would like also to note that Victoria is sending her apologies. I think that what we need to discuss is the recommendations that were proposed in the charter by Lisa, Matt, and Randy, and then the modifications that were proposed, and one addition, the modifications were proposed by Marika, and the addition was suggested by myself. I am not sure, because I see the attachment, I'm not sure who made the original recommendations. Am I correct in thinking that it was you, Matt? Do you want to take us through very quickly, and we can discuss them? Thank you.
It was Randy's email originally. Randy, feel free to do it if you'd like. I can do that if you prefer. Whatever.
I'm sorry, you want to add some new items you're mentioning?
This is Konstantinos. I've sent an email literally, half an hour ago, and I added number 7 in the recommendations. That was it, and it's in the agenda. I can see it on the Adobe, and it's under notes 7.
Note 7. Okay, definitely. I can re-add
that. Okay. So I'm not sure. I mean, Matt, do you want to take us through the first 6 recommendations?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. Just one second, let me... I lost the window. Sorry, 2 seconds. All right, so actually, maybe why don't we discuss... I guess we should start with the first sentence about whether we use the phrase recommendations or some other phrase. I saw the comments that the recommendations maybe will be treated as more of a term of art in the alternative language, at least as far as I'm concerned, from Marika looks completely fine. I don't know if anybody else has thoughts about that, but maybe it makes sense to address that first before we get into the numbered items, since that seemed to be sort of a preliminary issue that lots of folks were interested in.
Okay, thanks. Anyone want to comment on the use of the word recommendations? Remember that this we are drafting the charter here. There is going to be a working group that will be established. Michele.
Hi. Yeah, I had an issue with recommendations for the simple reason that it's the working group's job to come up with recommendations. So to suggest deliberations, questions to be considered, et cetera, is fine. And if you want to throw in anything in there, within reason, that would be okay. But to start talking about recommendations at the drafting stage, to me, seems to be a bit kind of putting the cart before the horse, or whichever analogy you're comfortable with, because ultimately what we're doing is just drafting the charter. So it's up to the working group to look at all the suggested topics, and then at the end of that process to come out with recommendations, as opposed to us prescribing at this juncture the outcome.
I guess I'll read really quickly this is Matt again, the language that Marika had proposed in the alternative, which looked fine to me. It was, quote, as part of the WG deliberations, the WG should consider, amongst others, and then went into the bullet point list.
Oh, yeah, which is fine by me.
Okay,
thank you, Matt. Thank you, Michele. Joy, you had your hand up, but you took it down. So I suspect that we agree on the use of the language as suggested by... Oh, Joy wants to comment. Joy.
Thank you, Konstantinos. Yes, I just by way of, a helpful reminder is that this list follows the preamble to the mission and scope that we've drafted. And the draft mission and scope clearly say that the working group should, as a first step, request public input on this issue in order to have a clear understanding of the exact nature and scope of issues encountered. And then this list that we're currently discussing follows from that preamble. So I'm certainly much more comfortable with the provision of an indicative or suggestive list of topics that might be covered. I think that fits more comfortably within the mission and scope, and it makes it clear that it's not a closed list.
Thank you, Joy. I will agree. I will agree with that. My reading also was that we are presenting this as being conclusive, and we can say that we are suggesting things, but the working group can exercise discretion, A, whether they want to actually consider them, and B, whether they want to add new ones. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to clarify, indeed, the language I put up in the note part was just intended to be for that addition to the original mission and scope, which I've now shown on the Adobe Connect window. I can take you all there to that specific section. So, indeed, it would be inserted between, I think, following UDRP proceedings, and then you would have the list of the weather questions, and then it would go into as outlined in the PDP manual, such recommendations, da da da. So it would indeed follow what is already initially discussed.
Thank you very much. Are we all right with that? Is everybody okay with it? I see people ticking, so I suggest that everybody, we're fine with this. Okay, let's go to the itemized list now, and let's start with number one. Whoever drafted that, can you please give us a little bit of background? I certainly have some issues, but I would also like to hear from others first. Thanks.
Sure, this is Matt. So I will just do a brief summary. The item was whether the creation, maintenance, and publication by ICANN of public email contact information for registrars for use with UDRP-related domain name lock queries should be explored. In the email sense, Lori Anderson has indicated that there actually is, indicated that there was a system called Radar that's not publicly available, but which other registrars and presumably the arbitration providers do have access to. The thought process behind this was one holdup frequently in, at least from the complainant side in a UDRP in getting a domain name locked, is that there isn't necessarily a clear point of contact for all registrars to notify the registrar that a proceeding has been filed. And so the suggestion was just to provide some sort of a centralized list to ease the administrative burden and help registrars engage in locking when it's requested.
Thank you, Matt. I see Michele on the line. Michele.
Speaking as a registrar, I understand where this might be coming from, but I mean, as Laurie kind of said on the list, okay, just to explain what Radar is, first of all, I think some of you might not be familiar with it. Radar is It's a sort of an extranet provided by ICANN. Some of the data is linked directly to the RAA, well, actually a lot of it is, and you know cannot be modified without a formal request being submitted to ICANN, whereas other parts of it are things that any I can go in as a registrar and update contact details and other things for ourselves. And some of the data is accessible by other registrars. So I could, for example, log into Radar now and I can find the contact point for transfers and other things with any of the other ICANN accredited registrars and various other data points. My understanding is that the email address, there's an email address in there that is used by the by WIPO and others around UDRP. So, I mean, we do all get notifications from WIPO and the others whenever a UDRP is, you know, submitted, started, whatever way you want to term it. I'm not 100% sure what providing a publicly accessible point of contact would do, because it's already, you know, we're already getting the contacts from WIPO and everybody else, so I'm not sure exactly what purpose that would serve that isn't already being served by what's already in place. Laurie, go ahead.
Yes, I was just going to say that I believe that if they,
no problem, Laurie. We'll get back. Anyone else want to make any comment? Matt, please.
I'll see Delory as soon as she's feeling a bit better. I guess the thought process was, or at least the fact pattern that had raised the issue, was that sometimes when a complaint is filed, obviously the complaint is served on the respondent, and it's not uncommon that the respondent will, the domain name registrant, will make one or even several changes to the listed registrant in Whois information prior to the point when the domain name is locked pursuant to the UDRP proceeding, which can end up having the effect of sort of delaying the start of the proceeding while the various registrant changes are tracked back. There's some administrative steps. A complainant has to amend the complaint, those sort of things. And the issue, because there's no set timeline at this point when the lock has to be put in place, some registrars have done a really good job of locking domain name very, very quickly in the proceeding. Other times it's a little bit slower, and just having a notification to the registrar earlier on in the process might help reduce some of those issues. That was the thought.
Thanks, Matt. Laurie.
Okay, sorry about that. I've had a cold the last couple of weeks, and it keeps coming back on me. When we receive a complaint, we are not required to lock the name prior to receipt of a verification from the provider. But we do if we receive a complaint prior to receipt of a verification, just to make sure that the domain doesn't go away. But, I mean, we wouldn't keep it locked indefinitely. We would expect to receive a verification request from the provider within a couple of days. And usually it's we receive, you know, we're just copied on the complaint when it's sent to the provider. So I'm not sure how other registrars handle that.
Thanks, Laurie. I don't see anyone else wanting to speak, so I would like to make a comment also here. I my understanding is that the system, the way it works right now, it works fine. This radar system that is in place, despite the fact that it might not be accessible by everybody, I think that the people who, well, the entities, the bodies that should have access to, already have access to, and it's been working smoothly. That's my first comment. I am not sure whether I can see the need to change that. The second comment is that, and actually it was to Laurie, I didn't know that, I would really like to hear from Michele as well as a registrar whether this is happening, because my understanding was that the domain name will be locked by the time you receive the complaint, since that's the official stage where everything starts, where actually one of the senders gets involved and says, here you have an official complaint. Thanks, Michele.
Well, is Matt, does Matt want to jump back in, because his hand is still...
Oh, sorry. Matt, is that an old hand or a new one?
I apologize. Old hand.
Okay. Michele?
Yeah, I mean, Laurie pretty much covered, I think, what a lot of people do. The area of... the kind of... the bit which is a small bit of a grey area, and I think it goes to Matt's problems and frustrations, is... okay, if we as a registrar receive, we might be copied on some of the complaints, but we're not going to be copied on all of them. But the problem for us is, of course, that if just because we're copied on a complaint, does that mean we are meant to impose a lock on a domain name immediately, or should we wait until we've received a confirmation from WIPO or whatever provider it is? And that I suppose is part of the problem from a registrar side. I mean, sure, GoDaddy might lock the domains. I don't know whether that ever actually causes them issues or not. Maybe Laurie could speak to that as soon as they're copied. But I mean, but normally in our experience, which compared to GoDaddy's is severe, is much more limited. If we were to receive a copy of a complaint from somebody submitting it to WIPO or one of the others, let's say for argument's sake in my time zone, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we'd probably be getting back something from WIPO less than 24 hours later. So the window between the two is very, very small anyway. I don't know if Laurie has any comments on that.
Michele, sorry, I think that we again fall into the substance issue. This is something, when the domain name will be locked, is something that I think the working group needs to deliberate. What I'm asking here, this group, is whether number one, item number one, should be included in the suggestions that we will be submitted, this group will be submitting to the new working group that will be established.
Do you want me to give you a binary answer to that, Konstantinos?
Please, and then it's Matt.
Okay. Personally, I would say no. No, but again, I can't be objective about that. As a registrar, I cannot give an objective view on that particular item.
Okay. Thanks, Matt.
I was just going to say that whether this ends up being relevant maybe depends on what the working group ends up deciding is the appropriate time that a lock needs to be imposed. If the working group ends up deciding that a lock should be imposed upon filing of a complaint, then having a way to make sure the registrar is being contacted with that complaint. Some registrars are great about providing contact information, some not, becomes important. So it's not necessarily something that would be a final work product for the working group, but it certainly could be important based on what the working group decides on other issues that are within its scope.
Thanks, Matt. Before I pass on to Laurie, can I then ask that this can be omitted, and if, can I suggest, number one to be omitted, and if the working group decides that the locking should happen at the point of the complaint, they might want to discuss it as part of it, because right now we might be confusing them, and it's that's a suggestion. Laurie.
I just wanted to say that locking the domain name when we're notified of the complaint by the complaining party does not cause an issue. It's not a secret when we do it. We notify the registrant immediately. But when we have not been copied on a complaint, you know, it's been submitted to the provider, but we haven't been copied, the domain name in question has transferred to another registrar, and that causes the complainant to have to go back and update the complaint. So I can see benefits to locking upon receipt of when the complainant is filing the complaint, and I can see problems if we don't lock, because depending on the registrant, the domain name tends to start flying from one registrar to another.
Thanks, Laurie. Matt, is that a new handle or an old one?
I'll figure this out soon enough.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thanks. I would just also like to read, Michele in the chat says that this point might be moot as this is being dealt within the RAA discussions. Can I then suggest, because we're already 25 minutes into the call, that we discuss this, take this on the mailing list, basically whether we want to keep this or not. My understanding from Matt is that this will be relevant if the working group that will be established decides that the locking should happen on the complaint. So perhaps we could let them insert that, but let's take that on the mailing list. Item number two, Matt, do you want to take us through that?
Sure. I think we've essentially talked about it in the context of number one. It's whether the creation of a proposed procedure that a complainant must follow in order to for a registrar to process a domain lock would be desirable. So it would be essentially, in the course of filing a complaint, does the complaining party have to let the registrar of record know by copying them on the complaint that a complaint has been filed, or some other procedure to make sure appropriate notice is given?
Thanks, Matt. Any comments on that, on number two? While you guys are thinking, I think I can make a comment. Then see if I understand this, Matt. So number two, if we ask the complainant to send a copy of the complaint at the same time they submit the complaint, then the discussion we had on number one, when the locking will happen, becomes sort of, you know, moot again, because the problem with number one was that, you know, normally the centers take, between 24 hours to 2 days to notify the registrars. Am I correct in thinking that?
It's the 24-hour to 2-day period that's the issue.
Okay. Joy?
Thanks, Konstantinos, and thanks, Matt, for raising this question. Bearing in mind that this is the question that's being asked is whether this issue would be one that the working group should look at, I certainly would have thought that this would be a useful issue for the working group to look at. In other words, should there be an outline of the proposed procedure? And I would have thought that that would have been particular interest to the working group, not only for urgent applications in the sort of 24-hour, 48-hour window, but also in other, across the range of circumstances in which a domain name lock request might take place. I have a separate point, but this may be the place to raise it, and that is that I think one of the other issues which the working group should look at is the issue of what are the rights of registrants, and what are the roles and responsibilities of registrars where a domain name lock request is made. I'm concerned in particular about the issue of due process, where, for example, issues of fair use are raised in relation to a UDRP dispute. And I would have thought that the procedural question that you raised in number two would also need to take into account those those factors. I'm pondering whether we should add as a specific issue something of that kind, but I'll suggest that perhaps when we get to the end. So my summary is, yes, I support that this would be the sort of thing that the working group might want to look at, but it also raises other issues which I think we need to point to in the terms of reference for the PDP.
Thank you very much, Joy McKellar.
How do I put this diplomatically? I think kind of questions of fair use and all those kind of things, that's straying into an overall reform of the UDRP, in my view. What we're looking at here, I suppose, that making sure, the registrar is already obliged to inform the registrant of actions that are being taken and all that, and of course the registrant also agrees as a standard part of any registrant agreement to be submitted to the UDRP. So I mean my kind of gut feeling is this, a discussion of kind of fair use and all that kind of thing might be a bit out of scope. It's more part of a larger UDRP reform, at least that's my understanding of it.
Thank you, Michele. Joy?
Thanks. Michele, please don't feel the need to be diplomatic, but I take your point, and the fair use example may not have been the best one to use. What I was really getting at was that somewhere in this process, I think it would be helpful if the working group is articulating from a registrant's perspective what are the due process protections that are in place for it.
So you're looking for kind of a clarification, a possible clarification of what their rights and responsibilities are?
Yes.
Maybe?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. That should be covered in the registrant's rights and responsibilities document that all registrars are now obliged to link to.
Okay. So it may be that some sort of...
I'll get you a link.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else has any comments on number two? Laurie, please.
Yes, I was just going to say that, the complainant should only need to notify the registrar with a copy of the filed complaint at their UDRP contact, should they choose to have one. But from a process standpoint, it would be beneficial to provide registrars with an outline of the steps of a UDRP case, because there's only a defined number of steps to every single UDRP case, and it's easy to have it broken down. And I believe that some registrars may not be aware of, what to do in each step.
Thank you, Laurie. One comment from me as well. I think that I agree with Laurie. I think that my understanding is that there is this, at some point, there is a gap of communication in between the filing of the complaint to actually... the center receiving it and then sending back, notifying the registrar. So I think that it would be efficient, a copy of the complaint with the steps of the UDRP. As Laurie says, these steps are very specific and they're not a lot, can be sent to the registrar. So the registrar, from day one actually, is they're aware what is happening. Laurie, do you want to suggest an alternative language on that? Are you happy with that language of number two, I mean?
I guess because it seems to be addressing the complainant, what the complainant must do, I mean, other than from the complainant standpoint, all they need to do is file the complaint and copy the registrar when they file the complaint. But I think that if maybe part of the... I don't know, maybe part of the written complaint form should contain the steps, although I don't know whether registrars are going to go through and read it, because usually you look for the domain name and, you know, go and find it and lock it and, you know, create a case for it or a claim for it. But I think that maybe it should be more addressed towards the process of the steps that it goes through.
Thanks. Do you want to suggest some language on that, on number two, that incorporates your suggestions?
I can suggest some language. I don't have it in my head at the moment.
No, I mean, we can take it on the mailing list. That's okay.
Okay.
Okay, Marika, can you please make a note that, you know, we will be suggesting language with number two, but generally speaking, my understanding is that we are all happy with this. Let's go to number three, whether the time frame by which a registrar must lock a domain after a UDRP has been filed should be standardized. Matt?
Sure. So this was added just to reflect the concern raised in our very initial call that Ms. Shedley and, and Lori had raised, that there isn't any clear guidance for registrars as to how quickly they needed to act and what the trigger was for locking a domain name. And this just puts that squarely on the working group's plate.
Thanks, Matt. Can I ask the registrars one question? Is there any norm as to when you guys are locking the domain name? I mean, here my understanding is that, you know, there is not a rule, but is there a norm? Thanks. Michele and then Laurie.
Laurie's got more experience in this area, so I'll let her go first.
Actually, as soon as we receive notification, if we receive notification of a filed complaint, so if a complainant copies us on their submittal, then we will lock the domain. And then we set a follow-up, and if we don't hear from the forum within 5 days, then we will reach out to them and say, is there really a complaint? And sometimes it's just they're going through their process and they just haven't gotten it to us yet for verification. But generally, we receive something from them within 2 days.
Thanks, Laurie. Michele?
I mean, we're not as big a registrar as GoDaddy. So we're meant to go get out your little pint-sized violins and, you know, go, oh, poor Michele. You know, for smaller registrars that don't have dedicated teams of legal teams and everything else, this some level of clarification with clearer, how can I put this, something kind of level of clarification will give you clearer parameters under which we are meant to operate in order to remain compliant is the key reason why I volunteered for this working group. It's because, from my perspective, if I'm going to lose my ICANN accreditation, I want it to be for something massive that I intentionally did. I don't want to end up falling foul of ICANN's compliance team due to a misunderstanding or possible misinterpretation of something. When it comes to this entire topic, it's not very clear. So the wording that's there, from my perspective, I'm perfectly happy with that kind of question, with that kind of query. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Anyone else would like to make a comment? Yes, no. I think that since you don't have a comment, I think that this is an uncontested item and we can leave it. So number three, we all agree that it should be there and we should ask the working group to address this issue. And I think the same goes for number four, whether what constitutes a locked domain name should be defined. I think that from the mailing list at least, I think this also was uncontested. Unless anyone wants to say anything on number four, we can go to number five. Great. Number five, whether once a domain name is locked pursuant to a UDRP proceeding, the registrant information for the domain name can be changed or modified. Matt?
Sure, and I can run the alternative language. I don't think there's any issue with the modified language that you had proposed either, which was whether once a domain name is locked pursuant to a UDRP proceeding, the registrant information for that domain name may be changed or modified. I think that phrasing seems like it addressed some of the concerns that were raised on the mailing list and doesn't change the underlying issue, which is just a clarification of the definitional question. If it's locked, can the registrant name be changed in any way?
Thank you, Matt. Anyone else? Anyone want to make a comment on number five? Michele.
So, Matt, would it be fair to say that 4 and 5 are basically the one thing? I mean, in other words, if if a lock or maintenance of the status quo, because lock doesn't actually appear in the UDRP language, is more clearly defined, then that does the same thing. I mean, it achieves the same goal. Is that correct, or am I putting words in your mouth?
No, that's exactly right. This is just one of the most commonly encountered definitional issues, and that's the only reason why it was called out separately.
Okay.
Would it make sense to put it under 4A and 4B? Perhaps. Marika, I mean, I see that. Yes, let's put that 4A and 4B. Anyone want to make a any other comments on 4B?
Nope.
Great. Then we can move to, well, what previously was 6 and right now it's 5, whether the time frame by which a domain should be unlocked after termination of the UDRP should be standardized. Haven't we discussed that? Should be unlocked, sorry, after termination of the UDRP should be standardized. Matt, do you want to, who suggested this? Matt?
Sure. So 5 is essentially the same thing as 3, except for the end of the procedure, and just to provide some clarity about the rules once the proceeding is over.
Thanks. Can I ask one of the registrars here, what's the norm here again? When does normally the domain name get unlocked after the UDRP? My understanding was that it happens automatically as soon as you receive the decision calling up for the transfer or the same status quo. Laurie?
There's a 10-day waiting period after you've received the decision.
And of course,
so
yes, sorry.
We count the 10 days. Now, if we're talking about a termination, then there is no more dispute, so it's over with and we'll unlock it immediately. But if there is a decision, then the other party has to have the option to dispute it through court, so they would have to wait the 10 days.
Thanks, Laurie. Ken?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Ken, we can hear you.
I'm sorry. There's just a couple of questions on these time periods. Correct me if I'm wrong, Laurie, but isn't there a specific requirement for the 10-day period? This is not an internal GoDaddy policy, but rather a policy that's hard-coded into the UDRP, is it not?
Yes, that is correct.
Well, then why are we even worried about whether or not this should be standardized? In effect, it is standardized, you know. We're talking about are we revisiting the current policies that the UDRP has with respect to these time periods? What right would a registrar have to continue to lock a registration on a domain that has cleared a UDRP with no, you know, no change or anything like that, the registrar would be in violation of the, I'm guessing, again, not being a registrar, would probably be in violation of one of the ICANN guidelines in the registrar accreditation agreement. Am I right or wrong there?
You're right, Ken, and Matt has just posted a message on the chat saying, sorry, I wasn't clear enough, after the 10-day wait period, how soon thereafter does the registrar need to unlock? So basically, you know, this refers to after the 10-day period has lapsed, how long does it take to unlock the domain name? Michele, then Matt, then Laurie. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, that's Matt's actually asked the question. I mean, it's how... sorry. I think, Laurie, even though you're thousands of miles away, it's catching. It's not... There seems to be some confusion, and this is based not on my own experiences, but just from kind of chatter and what people have said, that it's... There seems to be a bit of confusion. Yes, Ken is right. There is a 10-day thing mandated by policy. I think part of the seemingly this part of the confusion stems from whether it is on the 10th day or the 10th day plus one or something like that. It's actually it's not 100%. I think whatever it is, whatever way it's worded, seems to cause some confusion. Maybe Laurie can speak to that.
Please. Laurie.
Okay, the 10-day period is only on a decision, and if, like I said before, if it's a termination, it would be unlocked immediately. But the 10 business days is in the location of the registrar. So if there's a holiday or whatever, if the registrar is celebrating, then you know it would be moved on to the next day. We wait 10 full days, so you know the first 24 hours would end the day following that we received the decision. So we would wait 10 full business days, and then implement on the following day.
So this basically then happens, as long as it is a business day after the 10-day period, this happens on the 11th day, correct?
Correct.
Thanks. Ken?
Yeah. I guess my concern is why do we want to be putting these additions into our mission scope? It seems to me that what we really need, if we have any concerns, is a request specifically to ICANN to develop some sort of a clarification, whether it is a chart, a time, a guideline, or something like this that would go on the website where they discuss the UDRP. And I don't think we're not really doing anything that's policy-related here, but rather maybe more operationally related, how to make it work more effectively. To ensure that the public understands exactly what their options are, and if necessary, the registrars, it just ratifies to the registrars gives them the clarity as well.
Thanks, Ken. I think that what we're trying to do here is since this is subject to the locking of the domain name, we're trying to standardize as much as we can the process. Actually, we're not trying to even standardize that. We are asking the working group that will be formed whether there is a need to standardize the process. Michele?
I mean, Ken does ask a very good raise. Oh, God, my throat's going again. Ken raises a very valid question. Yes, I mean, of course, this is what we're actually trying to get out to clarify. It is primarily operational. It's not this working group's. The working group. This isn't even a working group. This is a drafting group. The working group will be working on clarifying an operational thing. But unfortunately, the operational aspects cannot be completely divorced from the policy. So as the policy, as the policies that sits over this cannot be touched on for whatever period of time it is, that's where this came from, because there is a strong feeling amongst registrars and obviously amongst people who are submitting complaints that there does need to be clarity and this needs to be cleaned up. So, I mean, yes, Ken, these are the questions that need to be dealt with, but I, for one, wouldn't be overly comfortable with the idea of ICANN unilaterally pushing out something and just saying, you know, this is the law, without actually offering us the ability to have a working group where we could actually get input from affected parties, both those who submit complaints and those of us who have to deal with the complaints, plus the affected parties, to see what exactly the issues need that we're facing on a day-to-day basis are. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Laurie?
I think that the time frame is allowable, or is for allowable court-filed complaints after a decision. So say the decision was to transfer the domain and you're waiting 10 days and then the other side is going to file a complaint. If the name was still locked after the 10-day period and a court-filed complaint was received after the 10-day period, then, you know, do you leave the domain name in the current registrant's account, or, you know, in their name? Do you implement it and then relock it for the decision, you know, relock it for the new complaint that's come in? Do you consider that court complaint a new complaint, even though it's filed against, you know, the previous decision? So I think that I believe that the 10 days is the time frame that, you know, you're allowed to accept a court complaint.
Well, the UDR, thanks, Laurie. The UDRP states that very clearly, that there is a 10-day frame. Can I ask the registrars before I go to Ken, is it a standardized process whereby after the 10 days something flags up in front of your systems to let you know that this domain name should be unlocked? I mean, what is the process? Do you go manually? Because if there is such a system, I am not sure that this is necessary. Ken, and then Laurie. Ken, are you there? Is that a new hand or an old one? Ken?
I think that's an old one, Konstantinos.
Laurie, do you want to say something? Is that a new one or an old hand?
Well, it's an old hand, but I can say something else.
Thanks, Laurie.
We have a process that, you know, we use the calendar follow-up dates, you know, and when we receive a decision, then we set it out, you know, 10 business days, and we follow up. And if we haven't received a complaint, then we implement the decision or unlock the domain, you know, or not unlock it, but we would implement the decision. If the complaint was denied, we would unlock it immediately.
So am I correct in understanding, Laurie, that you consider number 5 to be a little bit pointless?
Yeah, I mean, it's the 10 days is pretty standard in the UDRP. So I guess, you know, there have been arguments in the past over whether, you know, when do the 10 days start? Do they start on the day that you count the day that you receive it, the decision? Do you start counting the day after? You know, so there's some, maybe that should be clarified, but I don't know what, I think it's pretty standard.
Thanks, Laurie. I don't think that this drafting team or the working room can clarify when the 10 days starts, because it's part of the UDRP review. That's my reading, at least. Matt?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. The clarifying the 10 business day thing is probably beyond the scope a little bit if you're trying to figure out exactly when the counting goes. But there's nothing in the UDRP, the rules, or in supplemental rules that dispute procedures have that say at the end of the 10-day period, you then have to unlock it immediately, or do you just have to unlock it at the point? There's no standard, just like there's no standard on the front end, how quickly does it need to be locked after a complaint is filed? I just think the clarity would be useful.
Thanks, Matt. But I understand what you, where you're coming from, but at the same time, I do not see what the benefit, for example, would be for the registrar to keep the domain name locked indefinitely or for more than is required after the 10-day period. I mean, my understanding is that, you know, this is sort of an unconventional, uncontroversial issue whereby as soon as the 10-day lapses, the day or even by the latest 2 after, they unlock the domain name because they have no valid reason or they don't get anything out of it by keeping it locked. So what I'm trying to say is that it is not as controversial as the number 3, where you need to standardize when you will lock the domain name. But that's just me. I don't know. I suggest that this is not necessary, but this is my personal opinion. So I think that we should take it on the list and we should put a vote for each one of them and see whether we need it. I don't know. Laurie, do you want to say something?
Sorry, that's an old hand.
Ken? I think that's an old hand as well. And last but not least, number 6, whether the standard of the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP should be raised and not be based on a simple request by the complainant. I guess I need to speak on that because I was the one that suggested it. The rationale behind this is that complaints can be against cyber squatters, but as we have often seen in the UDRP, they're also against legitimate owners. I think that there needs to be, in order to preserve due process and fairness here, we will need, the complainant will need to establish that this locking should happen. So the burden of proof needs, the same way it falls to the complainant to prove the issues with the UDRP. I think that before we start asking registrars, and registrars, of course, will comply to have a much higher standard as to why the locking should be done. That is the rationale behind it. May I ask, Michele? Thanks.
I'm troubled. How do I respond to that? It's not really up the. I think, Constantinos, what you're getting at here is way beyond what we're meant to be looking at, because ultimately, under the current UDRP, as a registrar, if we are informed of a UDRP process starting surrounding a domain name, we are obliged to lock the domain or maintain the status quo, whatever you're more comfortable with. Whether the UDRP that is being submitted is totally spurious or not, it's not up to us to look at that. It's just basically we have received a UDRP. I think I'm not even too sure where this is coming from, because if the domain is subject to UDRP proceedings, we are obliged to lock the domain. If the UDRP is totally spurious, well, fine, but that's up to the panelists to decide, surely. I don't see how this is in scope. I'm quite confused by it, to be perfectly honest.
Thanks, Miguel. I can clarify a little bit what I was referring to. Right now, my understanding is that we really do not know when the registrar is asked to lock the domain name. So, for example, we may end up with a process where what this tries to prevent, better yet, is the scenario where the complainant first sends the complaint, the request for locking to the registrar, and then after 3 or 4, I don't know, 10 days, files the UDRP complaint. So basically...
Constantine, what you're saying then is if is that it, instead of a complainant
copying the registrar on a complaint as it's sent in to WIPO or whoever, that they send a separate, that they're sending a separate complaint with or without submitting it to the forum, the arbitrator, the panelists, the WIPO, the whatever
exactly.
you want to call them.
Exactly.
Okay.
So hold on.
So basically, what you're actually talking about here, if my understanding would be, that it's more to do with cleaning up the other request about the, I think that Matt was speaking to. I mean, Matt's got his hand up. Maybe he might want to address this. But I think the way you're phrasing that, I understand what you're getting at now, but the way you phrase that scared the hell out of me.
Okay. Matt? Matt, do you have your hand up?
Oh, I apologize. I still have the mute on. Maybe one way we can address this issue and the follow-up concern that Michele had about not wanting to be a UDRP decision maker in any way is to simply, if the working group decides it's the appropriate way to do it, and obviously that's a later step, to require the notice to the registrar that is a locking request to be in the form of a carbon copy of the complaint as filed with the dispute service provider. At that point, it's clear to everyone involved that the complaint has been submitted. Obviously, there still needs to be the formality check by the service provider, but that happens, as was noted earlier, within 2 to 3, in rare instances, maybe 5 business days. And all we're talking about is making sure that the domain name ownership doesn't change in that interim period.
Thanks, Matt. Anyone else want to make any comments? Nope. Joy. Thanks,
Konstantinos. And I'd just like to support Michele on his point that he's raising about keeping this as simple and as clean for registrars as possible, and certainly keeping registrars hands off, as it were, the dispute itself. I think that's critical. Point taken, Matt, on the issue of those complaints where there's simply a simultaneous notification of the registrar of the complaint that's filed under the UDRP. So I guess the only question then is if there are, you know, direct requests, just responding to your point, Konstantinos. And I suppose my only sort of observation would be that I think one of the useful questions for the working group to look at is whether, in order to both protect registrars in their hands-off role and also registrants, whether some other further requirement might be needed in the case of a complainant, that hasn't simultaneously filed the UDRP request a dispute, or whether that they just simply don't have the right to request the domain name locking at all. And I'm not sure whether that will cover your point, Konstantinos, or not, or whether that's going to be outside the scope of the working group's ambit. Just reinforcing that hands-off role for registrars and keeping it clean and simple for them is quite really important.
Okay, thanks, Joy. I can submit a much better word language for Michele's sake as well. Michele wants to speak, I think. We're already past the time, so Michele, please quickly.
I could be quick when necessary. I think, look, ultimately, number 6 in its current form needs to go. But I think it's moving into a dangerous area. What I think would actually work is maybe, Konstantinos, if you want to have a look at combining the spirit of what you're getting at, which I don't have an issue with, please don't get me wrong, I don't have an issue with what you're suggesting, but I think it needs to be, it's more to do with the entire kind of communication side of things. And just as a side note, complainants don't get to request locks. I've never come across that concept. You don't get to request the lock. You submit a complaint. It is up to the registrar to take appropriate action to freeze the domain. But the complainant can't ask us to lock the domain like that. I mean, that's not really how things work. I think it's been great. There's been some wonderful backwards and forwards here. Maybe we can just continue this on the mailing list. But I think we're getting closer. I can smell it. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Yes, I agree. I think that we're getting there. Can I ask Marika? My understanding is that we have a very tight time frame now, because if we want to have this for the agenda for the GNSO in Costa Rica, we need to submit it by the 6th of March. Is that correct, Marika?
This is Marika. Yes, that's correct. That's the deadline.
So okay, I think we should meet again next week then, Constantinos.
Yes, that's what I was about to propose. I think that we should do a lot of work on the mailing list, like we've done, and possibly meet next week and, if possible, finalize what this charter will look like, so we can just put it before, insert it within the GNSO agenda. Is that okay? Marika, can you please send out a Doodle poll for next week, even though I would suggest that we meet the same day and the same time. But if you can actually send a Doodle poll and see whether how many people will be able to do it, to make it next week. Any other issues? Matt actually says hopefully we can finalize an email. Yes, I mean, if we manage to do that, and at the last minute we consider that there is no need for a call, then we can certainly not have a call, but I think that it would be better to have it scheduled just to be on the safe side. So, Marika, can you please put out the Doodle poll and basically schedule a call for next week, same day, same time?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Any other issues, any other comments? Well, thank you very much. It has been great discussions, and see you, speak to all of you next week and through email. Bye.
Bye.